Hey everybody, this is Drew.
And this is Blake.
And you're listening to the Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Controllers podcast.
Everybody, welcome to episode 133. Never thought we'd be here, but that's kind of bonkers. 133 episodes. Thank you.
Say it like every episode now.
Yeah, I mean, we're past 100.
We're still here.
It's frankly mind-blowing for me, but I enjoy us getting to chit-chat about this stuff and, you know, all of our people who come and hang out. Before we jump into anything, I'm going ahead and shoot through our internet presence preamble. And then we'll talk about the game and everything. First and foremost, you can find us on all the social medias, from the biggest, most popular one to ones that are just now spawning because we're trying to be on the bleeding edge of technology, sort of, kind of, maybe not really. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That being said, we do have a couple of different things. The most important thing to keep track of our comings and goings, you can check them out on all the social medias, but we would really enjoy people coming to our streams that we tend to do every Wednesday around 9:30 Central. Mm-hmm. Just that's the time we've accidentally picked. It just seems to be the time that always...
In the middle of the week, the time we all agree on.
Enough to have it's like a pick-me-up from the stress of the week to finish out the rest of the week, because working sucks. But, you know, please come check us out on our Twitch. That is...
twitch.tv/2smokingcontrollers.
Where we hang out with our co-op endeavors co-host and our podcast editor and our cousin Brian. Mm-hmm.
Currently, finally, we quit a bunch of games in a row, doing our best to not just play Dark Souls games. And now we've started Dark Souls 1.
Remastered. I guess we could go back and do Dark Souls Plane if we wanted to.
Not at this point, yeah. So this one's going to be different from our other streams, as you'll see if you've watched any of them. We want Brian to kind of have the best like original experience of this as he can with having three people in the game, because Dark Souls 1 is quite literally a masterpiece. So Brian is actually hosting every stream for this on his fancy new computer. So he's got... You know, he can play with the stream and do different stuff that me and Blake can't do, including a soft launch of our new intro video that our cousin Daniel made. Thank you, Daniel, for that.
It's awesome. We love awesome.
It. We say the same thing we say about this podcast sometimes. At the end, when I say thank you to Jared for letting us use Letting Go, that is sometimes the best 30 seconds of the podcast. Well, now Daniel has taken and made an intro video with Letting Go, which will be the best, 30 to 45 seconds?
I think it's like 43 seconds, yeah.
So that'll be the best 43 seconds of any video you watch of us. So at least check out. It was on the second Dark Souls stream, mm-hmm. I think, which will be out pretty soon. Blake posts them on YouTube. Awesome intro. But anyway, that's what we're doing now is Dark Souls. And we're going to try not to pivot from Dark Souls straight into Elden Ring. We're going to try to put some other games in between it.
I think we have a few things to try.
We had a few things lined up. Our games just haven't been working out.
Yeah, they've just been like, bah humbug. But please check us out on the Twitch, and please come to the YouTube channel that I am curating. We release a new video every Saturday.
Yeah, that's just the Twitch stream videos.
That's just the Twitch stream videos, and I'm working on getting some other stuff on there as well. I got to go through the editing on those. Besides that, of course, we have our Patreon. Please check us out on Patreon. That allows you to, you know, if you want to, you get to name one of the episodes, which mm-hmm. is kind of cool. Besides that, we have some of our unedited footage. There's also some of my unedited footage that will be starting the YouTube stuff is my playthrough RoboCop Rogue City, which we'll talk about that once I actually get it finished and edited. We'll probably talk about it on the pod itself. And then we do have a store you can go check out. You got, you know, koozies, shirts, hoodies, mouse pads and stuff like that. That's all really cool. And there's a glorious pair of underwear we're looking for someone to model for so we can get photos of that, just so you can see the curvatures and the outlines. But that all being said, you can find all this stuff, all these links in the show notes. Just click show more and wham bam, thank you ma'am, it's all there, as long as Drew does his job properly. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, I think it's time for us to jump into our game, right?
Yeah, we do our best. We remember to announce the game the week before, just in case anybody's played it and wants to write in. We really like people to write in. I know we play obscure games. There's a pretty good chance nobody's heard of this game anyway. We got some more known. We got one or two more known things coming up anyway. Mm-hmm. But we announce it before so people can know what's coming, and gives you about 2 weeks to write in or say anything to us. And we're always looking for any kind of feedback, because we got listeners that are too scared to talk to us.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the game for episode 133, the game we're talking about is called The Bookwalker: Thief of Tales. And it originally came out, it's fairly new, actually. Mm-hmm. It originally came out June 22nd of 2023, so it's really new.
Yeah,
well, for us, we don't usually play stuff this new very often.
That means it must have, we would have put it on Game Pass. It must have hit Game, it must have nearly launched on Game Pass, and then when it left Game Pass, we jumped on it.
I think it launched on.
Yeah.
Now, it is developed by a studio called Do My Best Games. Now...
sad name for a company.
Do My Best Games. Now, again, these smaller studios are really difficult for me to find, and I in the limited information that I found, I even found conflicting information. So I found one website that said that they were Russian, and then I found another website, which is actually one of the founders' ex-Twitter page, whatever, and it said he was from Finland. So I'm not sure if it's Finland or Russia.
It could have been both. It could be one from the other. Work remotely and then kind of just say they're from Russia.
Yeah, so the two founders are Oleg Sergey and Andrei Rumak. And those are the only names I could find. So as far as I can tell, I think it's just these two people.
There's no way, but there is a total way.
It's a possibility considering the time frame between the two, because they've only put out two games thus far. Mm-hmm. One is called The Final Station. It's like a train thing, which
That's
I know...
them?
Mm-hmm. The final station.
It's on Xbox. We never played it.
That's them, yeah. And it originally came out in 2016, and then they worked on one DLC expansion.
Yeah, I don't know why we had. I don't know what kind of game it is. I don't know. I've seen it on Xbox and stuff.
We'll check it out, and then nothing wrong with looking at it, because especially based off how much I enjoyed this.
I don't think it's anything like this.
No, but we're trying. And so the company came together in 2014. In 2016, they put out their first game, and then like a year later, they put out their first DLC pack for that, and then nothing until 2023. So there is a massive gap between their first game and their second game, which if they're the only two people working on it, then I can see why it would have been such a big thing.
I don't want to distract you. That Final Station has a massive TA score.
I think it's got an unobtainable... achievement.
Yeah, it's got a walkthrough on TA, so we might look at the Final Station after playing this. I'll see. I'll put it on our Xbox wish list. We'll take a look at it after this podcast. I didn't know it was the same people. That's kind of cool. Oh, God. It's because there's multiple achievements with finishing the game with different people. I wonder if you have to, like, replay.
Probably.
I don't know if it's short. Anyway, that's cool. Sometimes we don't run into companies where we play a game we like, and we look back and we're like, oh, yeah, I've heard of that, or, oh, yeah, I've played that. We follow some companies, but that's this is interesting. I don't know if this will lead to us playing another game by them.
I mean, if it's we'll look into it. If they at least put it on the wish list, if it's under $10 or under $5, we'll buy it and try it eventually. And that's it. Unfortunately, that's all I could really find about Do My Best Games is just that. I do hope that they're working on more. Bookwalker is a very cool game, mm-hmm. and I'm excited for whatever they do next. And I will, based off my experience with Bookwalker, I will play their next game, and I will go back and I'll find this first game to give it a whirl.
Yeah.
Now, let's see here. It was published. I do want to try to shed some light on the publishers, because sometimes they're good people. The publisher was Tiny Build Games.
When are publishers ever good people?
Sometimes.
I'm just kidding. Some genuinely try to help people. Yeah. It's the big ones that suck.
Yeah, so Tiny Build Games. I think we've played a couple of their games. When I looked into it, they had done a bunch of different stuff. They've been around since 2011, but I'm just letting you know that the publisher, because I don't want to go into depth of all the games they've published, but I've heard the name Tiny Build Games before. Yeah. and not to be confused with the that what was that game called Tinykin, where they had, but it was not the same tiny builds, it's something else. So again, that's kind of it with the developer and the publisher, unfortunately.
This game is, I mean, is this a CRPG?
It's like, it could be like my first CRPG.
Because it's not very complicated. It's not as, and I like this one as compared to other ones that I've tried of this genre. We'll have Brian, because Brian's a little more familiar with CRPGs than we are, I think. Because I've tried to play a couple of this genre. People know it's computer RPGs. It's along the lines of the original Baldur's Gates. More recently, the Pillars of Eternity games. What's some other ones? But anyway, it's computer RPGs, a lot of clicking, a lot of reading and stuff like that. I don't know what deems a game a CRPG necessarily. I have to look into that. But this kind of falls like it, when I was looking at watching the gameplay for it the other day to remind me of what the game was, it has a lot of those elements. It has a lot of that, including combat. I would have originally have called it like maybe like just an adventure game, a point and click. But there is combat, like straight up combat. So that, I think that kind of changes it a bit to more of like an RPG, because you do get, like you said, you get different skills and stuff.
The description that I see here is it says that it blends elements of point and click adventure games and role playing video games.
That's pretty much a CRPG. Yeah.
Basically. And yeah, like I said, it sounds a little complicated because the way we're talking about it, but it's not.
Yeah, this is very. Streamlined, and like I've attempted to play a couple of CRPGs, and they all I bounce off of them a lot of times. I recently bounced off my second attempt at playing Pillars of Eternity because of Avowed is coming out. Avowed, if you didn't know, Blay, Avowed is the new RPG from Obsidian that's based in the same world as Pillars of Eternity. But it's like more like it's going to get a lot of comparisons to Skyrim, I feel like.
I'm pretty sure.
But it's pretty much what they're doing next. So I tried to do a Pillars of Eternity for the second time, and that game just walls and walls and walls of text. I told you that game goes off the deep end. I like to be eased into a game sometimes. Pillars of Eternity just goes right off the deep end into lore, and you're like lost immediately. This is way, even though this game is very, actually this game does kind of is strange right off the bat, but it's not like bombarding you. It kind of like, it doesn't hold your hand, but it like,
it's like, this is the world
not so much like, this game is strange, but the game does, we'll talk about it now, and we'll talk about what the game looks like. If you don't know what the game looks like, I'm going to attach a gameplay trailer to this in the show notes here, because this game has two different looks to it. As you start off in the real world,
quote unquote.
And where you spend a part of the game is in your main character's apartment, where he's not supposed to go.
His apartment building, because
you can talk to some of the neighbors and stuff like that, and then you go into his room. So you start there, and you talk to a couple of neighbors. This is done in first person, pretty good-looking kind of graphic, because you can make stuff look pretty good when you're in such a small area, even for a small team. You can knock on doors and bug a couple of the neighbors. This does the...
they speak through the door, so you don't actually see anybody.
Well, that too, but it does like this mumble kind of like... There's not really any voice acting. It's like this mumble talking it does through here. And then the words come across in these little text boxes. But then you go into your apartment, and you receive a phone call. And this is where you start hearing about your guy is a writer who's been...
forcibly given writer's block.
Yeah, it's very strange. Yeah, he committed some crime with writing, I guess, or maybe we'll see what his ability is here. Did some crime. You might know more in your notes. I don't remember everything.
Yeah.
And then he received his sentencing was writer's block for what, 50 years or something.
He was given writer's shackles, which forced writer's block for 30 years.
30 years. So he receives his phone call for somebody who can help him get his shackles removed early, as long as he does some jobs for them.
Yeah.
And each job, they say, you know, you do enough jobs that are worthy of the amount of trouble it's going to take us to get these shackles off of you. Because apparently it's more trouble for longer. And even the phone call, he's like, what do you got, 2 or 3 years? Something like that.
Yeah.
And he's like, I got 30. He's like,
whoa.
he's like, you're going to do some jobs for us. And the jobs is what comes into what's interesting about this, and what more, I guess, what writers can do in this. Because you only get everyone, like, you certain. Get the couple of conversations in here throughout the game, and then you get, and then what happens next is the guy on the call, and I like this. He's like, your job is being delivered to your front door. And you hear a ding dong at your door and a drop and footsteps that run away. That's and
very quickly.
Very quickly, so you can't turn around fast enough to get to the door to see any kind of, because there's no animations for people in this. No. You turn around and go to your front door, and there's a suitcase at the door, and you bring the suitcase inside, and you have a perfect writing desk already ready for this, and you put the suitcase down, you pop it open, you flip it open, and there's a book, something about the author, and then a
It's the item that they're wanting.
Mm-hmm.
A description of the item that they're wanting, a compartment to place the item.
Yes.
And then the actual book itself.
And something about the author.
Yeah.
So the thing about the main thing about this game is what you end up doing multiple times, and what's cool about it, and you go to different books as your book walker, as your guy can go into books and manipulate them and take things, items into books, which we'll talk about, and then what his job is to go into each book and steal items, which I'm feeling like this is something that may have been what got him in trouble to begin with, taking out powerful items outside of fantasy worlds, you know, because like the very first one we'll talk about is there's a potion of immortality that they want him to go into this book and bring back out, which apparently bookwalkers can do.
And then you're like, this seems strange. Why can't you just take it out of a book? Well, what it does is when they bring the item out of the book, it deletes the item from the writing. Mm-hmm. And it takes and that affects all the books.
Yeah, it's so
it's a weird kind of like, you know, we had to write that in there just because so people would question. But once an item is taken out mm-hmm. of the book, it deletes itself from all copies of the book, and it like either I don't know how I'll be honest. There's some suspension of disbelief here. Like I don't know if it rewrites the books or if it just destroys all the books because you pull this item out.
Yeah.
But it's
maybe there's more detail in a lot of the other talking that we just don't remember.
I don't think so. I think they explain it, but very like, hey, here's your explanation. I'm like, oh, okay. But
without deeper explanations and start, you don't question things, like the suspension of disbelief, this idea is already pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like when you jump into the first, when you like, especially if you didn't know what this game was. Like we were more like we would watch the trailer for it and saw that you were running around. Even the trailer didn't. Who knows if the trailer what it showed, but to walk around your apartment and pop this case open, and then when you click on the book, it opens up and you fly through like a paper portal, and then you land inside this book, and then you're introduced to all the new gameplay mechanics, which this one gives you one right away. When you land in this
book, oh yeah, you like hurt your knee.
Yeah, when he lands in this book, he hurts his knee, apparently.
And then, that's like the tutorial. It explains you how you use ink.
Ink
you get from, some of your abilities are like bleed or like draw ink from enemies that you're killing. And that allows you, with the ink you have, it allows you to like break the rules of the book.
Yeah.
Like if you're like, oh, I'm in a locked room that's not supposed to be unlocked because the story never goes into this room.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, okay, well, let me just pour some ink on this doorknob and make the door go away. And it takes, you know, it's silly, but it does take...
The game takes it
very seriously because the ink is limited, and it looks, from my understanding, it sounds like the ink is also part of you. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like ink, your blood, maybe?
Yeah, I'm not
There's
sure
like a mix of, like, actual ink and your blood.
Because he uses, like... On that first instant, you can use ink to heal your
knee.
Heal his hurt knee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually, I don't think it worked because his shackles burn.
Yeah, and he can't
burn with cold. I think it said burn with cold when he tries, because that's what the shackles do. He's not supposed to be able to use his
abilities,
which he still manages. You can use them throughout the whole game. So I'm not sure exactly what the shackles
subtly.
Are. Yeah,
maybe he's like hampered.
Yeah,
and we're playing with, you know, but it's cool. And
so that's a lot of stuff we just said that makes this game sound really complicated, but it's actually, once you're rolling, and once you're, because your apartment's really small, and you do talk to your various neighbors throughout the game, and get a little bit of lore from them, and you get items from them and stuff like that too, and those are how we talk about bringing items from the real world, like you'll need something.
One of the first things you get here is...
A sledgehammer?
A sledgehammer, yeah.
Oh, no, wait, though.
Is the...
Or the lockpick first.
Well, the lockpick you bring in yourself.
No, you have to go back out and get it, though.
Yeah, you do have to go back out and get your lockpick.
Which I don't think they're sitting there in the chair when you first go in, unless they are. But you can't find a way out of this. So when you first land in this first book, do you write down the names of the books?
Yeah, the first book is called Drop of Eternity.
So this is the one where he's going in to...
Find a potion of immortality.
So he drops into a jail cell.
Or Elixir of Immortality.
Elixir of Immortality. And you can't, you do all kinds of different things. You try to heal your knee. You try to use ink on different things. You click around the room. And this is the part that looks like it, because it's the above camera. It
does an isometric view.
And you're clicking on things, and you're getting, like, dialogue boxes. This is the part of the game that seems very, very, like, Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, or very just CRPG in general. You click around different things around the room, are able to click on and move and talk to. And then eventually, he mentions something like, I think I had some lockpicks lying around my room. And you're able to just wake up out of the book anytime you want. Apparently, there's no issue with this. You can just
wake up and you come back exactly where you were standing.
Yeah, which is pretty convenient for him. And there's just some lockpicks that were sitting in this chair.
Like, you didn't see when you were in the real world prior.
So you grabbed the lockpicks. I'm not going to remember because I'd watched this. I'm glad I watched a bit of gameplay for this to refresh my brain. So I remember all this part right here now because I'd watched the video for a bit just to refresh my brain. So that's why I remember all of this. I'll have to rely on Blake on his notes for more later parts of the game. But you do grab that lockpick and you can take real world items. I don't know, like, so you don't want to dig too deep into it, but like the implications of taking any real world item into a book with you is just strange. Because you do the lock, for here you do the lockpicks, and eventually you borrow a sledgehammer from a neighbor to smash a wall inside these prison cells. And it's just like, and the neighbor's like, bring back my hammer. And I think you get an achievement for bringing his hammer back or something. Yeah. You actually bring his hammer back to him and give it back to him.
And if you don't, he's like, hey, he'll like send you a like slot of note.
I think you break it, actually. I think you break his hammer back, so then you give him back a broken hammer.
Yeah.
But, I'm gabbing a bunch because it seems like a lot, but like if you're just, you know, looking at it and you playing it, like it kind of all kind of comes together because you don't have a billion choices. You're kind of like, you can figure out this.
I think some of the books end up with like a choice.
Yeah.
And if you're going for the 1K, the Platinum, actually, I don't think it's on PlayStation.
They might have got some Game Pass money.
Yeah, that's possible. I just want to double check. Okay, well, yeah, so it's not on Switch. It's on PlayStation. It's on Xbox. So if you're going for the 1K or the Platinum, there are some tedious things of having to like replay through a book. But like once you've played through the book initially, you're like, oh man, that was like, you know, a few hours. But then when you replay through, you just skip all the dialogue and you make, you know, speed, and you already know, because there's it's you know, like Drew said, it's a CRPG, so there's some like light puzzle solving. And as you progress through the book,
I'd say the puzzle solving aspects of it are the majority of what you do. There's that, and then there's, I'd say, light combat. The combat's not, I like the combat in this because it's simple but
satisfying,
sort of. It's simple, but you can't just hit attack. You have to think about it, like you can literally, because you're not invincible. You have to think about, sorry, I want to go back to puzzles, but combat, you have to think about each turn. You have to really think about which one do I want to do this turn, and we'll talk about combat here in a minute.
Yeah.
But I would think it's more of moving your way through the book and talking to people and manipulating the book is more the front end of what you're doing. As I thought, I think it's more of a puzzle solving. It's more, I mean, there's, you say light, they are not super complicated, but is, I think the game is puzzle heavy.
You can think of each fight as a puzzle.
Even the fights honestly, are kind of puzzles, yeah.
Because you're like, oh, I got three enemies, and they hit me. You're like, oh no, I have enough health to take two.
Yeah, I don't want to move into combat until we're. You want to talk about how you work through puzzles and stuff like that. But.
How you work through, like I said, there's in a total, there are 7 books you go through in the game.
Ooh, that's a lot. Hey.
Yeah, there's 7 books. Each book is, each book is like vastly different from the one previous, which is really good for you.
Mm-hmm.
This first book, like I said, is called The Drop of Immortality. And it starts in like a medieval dungeon. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh man, this is kind of cool. I like medieval stuff. I like fantasy stuff. But as you progress through, because each book has its own twist, its own lore and stuff like that. So as you progress through this one, you come across a kid who's being tortured.
Mm-hmm.
He has like a bag on his head.
Well, before that, you meet your tag-along character.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You, this is really strange. You find the corpse of another bookwalker.
Mm-hmm. Previous guy sent on this job.
The previous guy sent on this job, and he's just dead in a cell. And then he has this little phonograph around his neck, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And this person's talking, and he's like, hey, I'm...
Well, it's a little cage, ain't it? Mm-hmm.
It's a cage with like his phonograph or whatever. I'm not entirely sure. They obviously give you a very descriptive description of it, but I don't remember. but this character is named Roderick, And he himself is a book character who's been ripped from another book, but he doesn't know where he came from because the piece of him that they took only knows limited knowledge. And he can, but he's really smart, and he can translate a bunch of things that you encounter in the books, and he can.
Well, he says on this first one, I don't know about the other, but he's read this book. He said something. I've read this book front to back multiple times.
Yeah.
So he can give you. It's kind of funny because he can give you information on the book that you're in, because you're experiencing the book too. Your main character is, what's your main character's name?
Oh, our main character's name is Entian Quist.
Yeah, and he looks like his character model. What bookwalkers look like apparently can scare people.
No, yeah.
So he can use ink to change what his face looks like. You have to look at the gameplay footage to see what his face looks like.
It's like a book, and it's fanned open, and the pages are like his hair, and they kind of fluff up, and then he has like a weird amalgamation of a face on the spine of the book.
Yeah, apparently Roderick mentions it freaks people out inside books, so you like to kind of not. Hide your identity or something like that, or use ink to morph your face, make your face look human. But dang, I lost my train of thought on that, talking about Roderick.
You find him, and he says he's read the book front and back.
So he has the full details of stuff, and then your main character is like, no spoilers. I'm like, this is like life or death. Like, you need this dude to like really tell you what's going on in this book.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know why. I don't know if it's just like a character tick about him. He don't want what's happening in the book. Maybe because he's been in so many books. Maybe experiencing something new is important to him. But he's always like, no spoilers. Even though Roderick has like, he'll say like, oh, the thing with the key, I guess, in the beginning, like, you could grab that key. You're gonna need that key. And it's like, he goes to grab it, and it was hot. And he was like, well, yeah, I could have told you it was hot
if you'd asked.
If you'd asked. But yeah. He said no spoilers. You chase this key for a while. It's kind of like, I wish we could talk about every book.
Every book, yeah. But we're trying to, yeah. Because the whole, this book, and it's, oh God. The twist of the book, each book is actually really cool. This one's big twist is it's not, you find out closer to the end that it's not a medieval book at all.
Yeah.
Like, these people have kidnapped.
These people to experiment on them. To experiment. Then they're trying to get the potion of the elixir of immortality correct. So they've experimenting on a lot of people.
A lot of people. And then you go through, and, well,
because you walk into the first time you walk into a place in a dark room, and then all these light, these like electric lights start clicking on around you.
It's the room where that kid's being tortured.
Yeah,
and then there's a couple of choices that I don't really know if they mean anything. Like right here, like you can pull the bag off the kid, and you can see your face, or you can see your normal face, or you just leave the bag on and talk to him and save him, tell him to run out the back door, and then like it's all really cool. And then, eventually, I think every book, obviously, it ends with you coming to a decision with the item. And I don't know if I want to spoil, like, the stuff for within the books, in case people want to experience it.
Honestly, we'll talk about this one, because it's the first one.
Yeah.
And then we can kind of, because obviously, I don't have the memories of the rest of the game. We almost want to play it again. I got the 1K. Yeah. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it's a...
But once you go through all the hubbub... It turns out, like, you know, in the first book, the dude has the elixir of immortality. Because when I say they were torturing this kid, they were killing him over and over again. They were shooting him, stabbing him in the neck, killing him, and they were bringing people back to life with the potion. And this particular kid was the successful one. So he had been shot, stabbed, he had been killed a bunch of different times and brought back to life. So that whole kid's got his own anime that can be written about him. But you find out that the potion works, and then there's a whole series of events that leads you to getting out of this production area of this like medieval dungeon, and then into the real world of like this scientific laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
And then you like you use your ink to some of the combat. I think the only monsters you fight are
only the spider things.
I think it's the ink spiders.
Yeah, Rod, your main character explains it as it's these things come to stop you from. They appear for people who are messing with books, basically.
They're trying to rectify.
And they appear as one of your greatest fears. Apparently, your main character has a fear of spiders, so his look like spiders.
Yeah.
So and you run into these pretty, you get into quite a bit of combat, actually. I would say light combat, but there's a lot of, you. There's like And the battles, there's no random battles. I think they're preset when you walk
preset,
in a circle.
Yeah.
Because enemies come crawling out from behind things and knocking stuff over. So you have, like 3, 4, 5, you know, and a boss kind of in here.
Usually.
Yeah. Do you only fight the spiders? I feel like you fight other stuff.
You fight other stuff in other books.
So maybe it's just spiders in this book?
Yeah.
Because I think he said it was like portrayed by his fear or something.
Because there's robots in one of them.
Oh, yeah, there's robots in the other one. So yeah, it's something he explains. It says it about his fear or something like that. But the combat is simple, yet somehow entertaining. I like stuff like that where you can...
It's not overly complicated.
Like you only ever have like three choices in combat.
You get slightly more depending on the choices that you make. Because after each book, or the start of the next book, rather, like the following morning for the next book.
Yeah, you have a little notebook. You have your journal.
You can pick an ability. But once you pick an ability, that's the ability. You don't get to do it back and forth like in some games. You pick that one. You pick
what do you call it?
Skill tree.
Skill tree. God, I forget skill tree in video games. Once you go down a tree, you're in that tree. I don't remember all the different skills, but the basic ones are like, the basic one is like slice, was it slice, drain, stun?
Yeah.
So, say you're fighting like two, like you almost right about you're fighting like two spiders.
Two or three spiders.
The enemies state above them what they're going to do.
Yes.
Which is pretty important. People might think, oh, knowing what they're doing sucks. It plays into how you play this.
It's part of the puzzle solving of the fight.
Part of, so say you have one, and they'll attack, they'll wait.
It'll say hit, idle, and then it'll say whatever their special move is.
Do they defend or a special move? I don't know if they defend.
I know for sure that it says hit and idle.
Hit and idle are what's the main things. And then they say they'll have special moves too. Mm-hmm. The bigger enemies, bosses especially.
Like smack.
So you have, I think it's like slash, drain, and stun. Slash is your highest damage, but it costs ink to do it. And you'll have other skills that cost ink. Drain always does one damage. I think you can increase, depending on your skill tree, you can make drain do more, or you can make drain like do more damage but absorb less ink, or stay low damage and then draw more ink or something like that. You get to manipulate the skill, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it does subtly change the combat. And then stun hits all enemies. I think it costs the most ink, does one damage, but stuns everybody for a turn.
Okay, I think it costs, I don't know if it has a set number, if it costs like 50% of your ink or something like that. Or
probably depends on, I'm sure it has a set amount, and when you change stun on the skill tree, it changes how much ink it costs. So you have you start with full ink. The first turn, all three spiders are, let's start with two, I guess.
Yeah.
I think it starts with three. So both spiders are saying hit. So first turn, you would stun, and you would stun both of them and do one damage, and say they have three life. So now they each have two life. Your next turn, you'll see that one spider says idle, one spider says hit. Then you want to take your slash and then slash the spider that's going to hit, and you'll kill that one, and the idle spider won't do anything. And then when you come back around again, at this point, sometimes when you have lesser enemies, it's the time you want to use drain to maybe drain one. So, like, you see how you can, like, I know that's a pretty boring and lame-sounding example of what you can do, but you have to make sure, because you only have, like, I think you get more health, but you only have, like, 6 or 8 health to begin with, and the spiders are hitting for one, and then the boss will hit for, like, two. So you've really got to... think about each turn which moves you're going to do. Now you do get random items within the book, like the first thing you see will be apples and stuff like that, and you can actually heal yourself, but those are limited too. But you can heal yourself, but I think it's just about not being gung-ho in combat and actually thinking about each turn what is the best move is going to get you through this fight. And I like it being that way. It makes it not simple but meaningful.
Yeah,
like every turn you have to like make sure you're, because you can, you know, make a wrong thing if you do.
And if you die, you have to restart the combat.
I don't remember. Maybe get some robots. I think it just puts you
in the room before the combat, or like outside the combat, and you would take a step forward so you can retry. I don't think it boots you.
Yeah, so there's not high stakes, but like you do have to like pay attention with it, which I think is kind of interesting. For a combat that could have just been like really just tacked on and meaningless, they actually made it interesting, I feel.
Yeah.
Like.
Simple, and intricate enough for the story, because your whole point is like solving puzzles, but yeah. Combat, it's making combat itself a form of a puzzle that's not like overly complicated.
And also, combat's never hard, and I don't think it's ever really annoying, not really. And it's good to like break up the pacing of just walking around, because like walking around and clicking on stuff It's a perfect little, and it seems like it's usually pretty well paced out, at least from what I can remember from the first book. I think it's just done really well, and I really, really remember enjoying it throughout. And like you said, getting the other, I think we may have shown different skill paths on purpose.
Well, there weren't many skill paths. You had, like we already said, you had slash, drain, and stun. Mm-hmm. And the last one you get is shield, which makes you immune to damage. Mm-hmm. For that turn or whatever.
Yeah, that costs ink, I'm sure.
And then, of course, all the upgrades are like, ooh, shield for two turns. And then there is stun. Well, I think stun only hits one enemy. I think you have to upgrade it to hit all enemies, and it deals less damage, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm pretty sure it hits all. I think from default, it stuns the group, I think. Stunning one enemy, I don't know, this doesn't seem like...
Well, you stun the one that's going to hit you, and the other two are idle, so it makes sense. I think combat gets more complicated, and you can stun all as part of the upgrades. Because there's not a lot of upgrades. There's only upgrade for every book. And there's not one for the first one. There's one for the second one for it. So there's only six upgrades you get. There's not a lot you can do. But they are, like I said, they are good. And you can't get all the skills. Mm-hmm. So you have to pick and then determine your playstyle and how you solve the puzzles of combat.
It's done really well.
Yeah, I genuinely enjoyed the... And then getting to see the numbers go up too also helps, because as you go up, you're like, oh, let me level up Slash to, you know, do this. And mm-hmm. It is really nice. But as this first book comes to a conclusion, you're given a choice. Because this character in the book, his whole point of this immortality potion is the individual wants to bring his dead wife back to life, I think is what it was.
In the real world?
No, it's in the book.
Oh, in the book.
It's okay. In the book. We have no idea what they're using the items for. They don't tell you.
The whole point is like, do the job, don't ask any questions.
Yeah, it's not part of your it's none of your business. But then you have a choice. You can give him half the potion, or you can take all of it. And then, you know, it doesn't really do anything on the whole, which I'm like, I hate pointless choices like that. There's an achievement for both. So you have to force you to replay, which does take away some of the value of the game.
Just the first one you have to replay?
Yeah, there's a few other choices you have to make throughout, because it does, like, but you can speed through them. But
yeah, the first one is the shortest in the books, too. Yeah.
And then you get to leave. You make your choice. You're like, well, I'm going to keep, whether you have the potion or make the potion, it does affect how much they pay you and stuff like that. Like, we wanted a full potion, and you have to come with some, like...
There's no real-world money value to anything you're doing. It's all plot.
Yeah. But yeah, you come out diving into the books, and it looks really cool because it does like a... For anybody who's ever seen Army of Darkness, when Ash goes to the graveyard to find... the Necronomicon, one of the books he opens up is a book that sucks him in. It kind of looks like that. It has like this little wormhole and your character dives into like the wormhole. Yeah. And it looks really cool every time you do it. I like that every time. But once you pop out of the book, the case opens up and there's a whole little animation of you setting the potion in, and you close the thing and you close the case and you take it downstairs.
To the front door.
To the front door. Of the building. And you set it there, and he's like, "Now turn around." And you turn around, and you hear the door open, and it slide away, and then like something.
I think you just open the door and you slide it out, and somebody's there just to grab it. You don't see a person grab it. It's funny. It's like it's a funny. You don't think about it as a way to like not have real world character animations. Cause it probably costs more money to do that kind of
stuff. Sure it does.
And you don't have any reason to see these people. There's no reason to see them. So we can't really dive into it because he said there's seven books. Yeah. I would like to, if you want to give if you have your notes, I'd like to give the name and the item you're trying to get, and maybe a brief description of each of them, maybe?
Kind of. I have a kind of brief descriptions I can get. Some of them are a little harder to explain, but so our first book was you had to get the Elixir of Immortality. The second book you're trying to get, hold on, I can get the name of the book at the very least, so I'm not that rude. The second book is called A Hammer and a Spark. And you were trying to get, you're literally trying to get the Hammer of Thor, Mjolnir. But I think in this, they call it the Hammer of Thor.
Yeah, remember, it's powering. I remember it's like slamming into something, powering mm-hmm. something. Is it powering this factory or something?
Yeah, well, this is like a whole Asgardian thing, as you can obviously tell by the Hammer of Thor. And you come across these robots that have been asleep for a long time. And this is frozen wasteland.
Yeah.
And this machine is keeping itself alive. And then there's people who...
The workers of the
factory. The workers are like rioting, trying to get to, they want, you know, they want to be
get
in charge.
They
want to
get the hammer, yeah.
Because they're being bullied by robots that run the facility.
Yeah, I think the I think there's a double achievement here, right? There's the one where you fight the workers and the one where you talk your way through the workers.
Yeah, there's a multiple thing where you, because it's like, well, there's also like an overall achievement that's like avoiding every avoidable fight and then fighting everything no matter what. There's like, mm-hmm. I think you have to play through the whole game.
Yeah,
multiple times. But
I'll say that sounds like I played the whole game twice or played a bunch of things twice. My total hours was like 10 hours and like 40 something minutes, and I really enjoyed.
Yeah, mine. Time, yeah, so. Mine was 11:29.
Yeah,
and you can speed run,
especially when you know where you know. It's like the getting through the stuff doesn't change. Like you have to when you do the puzzles in themselves, mm-hmm. it's running back through something. And say with 7 books in 10 hours, you imagine each of these are like
an hour.
Not even if you know where you're going to on the second run. But anyway, so running back through sounds irritating, but if you want to see the two ways to solve something, because like you said, the first one has the half or whole elixir. This has the
talk your way through it.
But anyway,
one of the other things you get here, it was a striking visual, because the robots were kind of cute, like not Wall-E-esque, but they were cute. They were kind of derpy looking. Mm-hmm. But one of the, because it's kind of jarring, because you walk into it and you're walking around this area, and one of the first things you see is a hanged robot, just like stuck in a tree. And part of your thing is to get the robot down because you want to steal his batteries or whatever, because mm-hmm. you're a grave robber. And then you use the batteries to power some of the puzzles throughout the game to open up doors and close doors and take your batteries.
Or raise that building up out of the snow.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then the third book, which is titled, let's see here. The third book is titled The Cornelius Paradox. And that's basically that's like a Harry Potter world. Like you're at a school that's got four houses. It's literally the Harry Potter world.
Yeah.
And the whole point is they want the Cornelius, what's it called? It's called the Cornelius's Paradox, and it's a magic wand that's very similar to Schrodinger's cat. Like, no one knows the spell inside the wand because it's never been used, but it's been deemed like legendary, and it's like this dead wizard's great. It's like
Schrodinger's wand.
Yeah, basically. And it's literally just Harry Potter. You have people who are like dissing on some of the other kids for being mudbloods, but they use a different word.
Yeah. I remember there was like a...
There's some pretty dark stuff that happens in that, though.
People get killed in there, I feel like.
People get killed, and this one girl's getting haunted by these ghosts, and you find out that it's kids that she burnt alive, and that's why they're haunting her, and you're like, oh, God.
I remember there was I think the split achievement here, not a full decision. There's one where you help a teacher or you help this teacher.
It's a new teacher.
And these kids are going to like
play a prank on him.
I think it's a vicious prank. Mm-hmm. So you can warn the guy or not warn the guy results in two different achievements. You got to do it. You got to do that part twice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. You remember the school? I remember running around the school.
Running around the school was pretty cool.
Yeah. These are all cool because they're all in like, this one's actually, because the one before you're running outside and you have to go inside the buildings, you actually move around and get in a vehicle and drive across down the snow road. But they're all contained. And this one is like, this one's entirely inside this school. It's the only place you really go to.
You're going up a couple of different floors and then into multiple like
floors,
the
hidden stuff hidden
in the walls and stuff. You solve like little puzzles inside the room to open up the secret entrances, and that one of the secret entrances leads you down to a room full of dead burnt bodies because this girl was sacrificing these people, and you're like, oh my Lord. And like, it's pretty dark.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then the third book.
Uh-huh.
And the fourth book is called The Black River Drifters. What is that one? Hold on. That one's not sparking anything for me. Black River Drifters. Is that the one? Is that the one that's kind of like Space Marines?
I don't know. I don't remember. Everything else has been so kind of cool to talk about.
Yeah, book three is the school. Hold on. Book four. Book four is the, it's like the weird Space Marine thing. The whole point of four is you're getting Excalibur. And you're walking around. It's literally like there's this computer, this rogue AI who's like scans you and you're like, it's Arthurian legend in space. And the whole point is they're trying to go to take Excalibur because King Arthur died. So they're trying to take Excalibur back to and place it on the planet instead of the stone on the planet that it was from, and then try to get things. And it was like a whole weird, it was Arthurian legend in sci-fi on a spaceship, and that was pretty cool because you were fighting some robots, and then like the big fight for that one was the rogue AI. It was like a giant floating mm-hmm. head and stuff like that, and you fought little things, and you... And again, you had to like take power from here, power over here, and like redirect the power supply, and then like blow, because you had to use the turret to blow something up. There's like a massive space turret that was actually kind of cool, but there's no outside. It was all inside, sterile environment, and you're pinging up and down the different levels. Because like in the certain floors were deigned only accessible by people of a certain rank of knighthood. Mm-hmm. And so you had to like hack the computer to up your knighthood, use ink to hack the computer to up your knighthood so that you could have access to all these different floors. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that at all?
A little bit. Didn't we were going up and down the elevators and stuff like that?
If it helps, there's a Steam walkthrough that's got pictures, and that's what I'm looking at to help me.
Okay.
Kind of like spark some memories in my noodle. And then like that one's kind of my least favorite, because it was just kind of like up and down the elevators, up and down the elevator, and you're getting like audio logs and stuff to try to figure it out. I think that one honestly might have been my least favorite, which is kind of sad because that's kind of some like really cool material. Like, you know, Arthurian legend, but in like on a spaceship with some sci-fi stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I found some. I should have already pulled. Has some YouTube. YouTube has them actually divided up between each book.
Okay, there you go. And then what is our last one here?
I got two.
Okay, so
book five.
Book five is actually, this is kind of a really cool plot twist for the game, because book five is let me find the actual name of the book. Book five is called Timeless Mansion.
Yeah.
And this is actually really cool because Timeless Mansion is actually a book written by Entian Quist. It's a book written by you.
Oh, really?
This is a book written by you that is unpublished, written by you. So there's only like one copy in all of existence and they have it. And what they want you to get out of the Timeless Mansion is a time-traveling clock that you have to pull out. Now, do we want to go into the story here?
If we're passing on the story of the other ones as much as possible, you know, a little bit, we might want to.
Well, this one's
about the main.
This one's directly related to Entian and his writer's block and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So you,
if you got notes for it,
I got a little bit of a notes. So it's very small, but it's a time traveling clock. If people in this house can move forward, it's like forward and backward 50 years with you know. In the house.
You're doing different time instances of being in this house. Because
part of the house is broken, or part of the house isn't even built at a certain point. You have to, you're fast forwarding through. And there's a Jekyll and Hyde situation where this, the master of the house, and he's trying to hunt you down. Because this book is so strange, because
this game looks good. I'm looking at the video now. The game looks so freaking cool.
It looks really awesome. But this particular one, I forget the master of the house, but he knows you. He's like, Entian, where are you? Like when you arrive and he's like trying to hunt you down, he's like, where is Amanda? Where did you take her? Where is Amanda? And he's like trying to hunt you down to kill you to try to find out where Amanda is. And as you're bouncing back and forth through time, Roderick's asks you some questions. He's like, this is so strange. It's your book and all this stuff. But it's revealed through the course of stuff that Amanda's not in the book anymore, because Entian is such a good writer of his characters that he wrote this character Amanda. Then he would dive into his books and have conversations with his characters, because he had more fun with his characters in the books than he did real people. And he ended up writing Amanda so well and made her so real that he fell in love with her and then brought her to the real world, where they were married and stayed together for a couple of years. But then she left him. And her leaving him is how he got caught about that stuff, and that's what leads to all of his writer's block for 30 years and stuff like that, is he fell in love with the character he'd written and then pulled her to the real world, and then they were married and together for a couple of years, which is insane. And then she ends up leaving him because he again is obsessed or something, his own personal flaws. I forget exactly why she leaves him, or maybe he, but no, she doesn't go back in the book, so they leave her, and then she gets taken away. And you're like, that's mind-blowing.
So I guess the crime is bringing a person, like a
sentient... A living, breathing person. Taking items is frowned upon. Obviously, you're not supposed to do that either. But bringing a living, breathing individual, an illegal alien, essentially, from a book to the real world. And you're like, that's... Whoa.
Yeah.
That's kind of cray-cray.
But this one is kind of neat of the different... How many instances of time are there on the
I think main? There's three. There's like a... In the future where the whole house is dilapidated.
Mm-hmm.
And you have like staircases missing. And then there's like further back in time, there is the... Where you can like go upstairs and stuff like that. And then there's an even further back in time where there's like certain secrets aren't built into the house yet, and you have to like get a key to a door that's not made yet and stuff like that, and then like remove a painting. I think it's three separate times, if I'm not mistaken. Hmm. And of course that leads to a massive fight with the master of the house and stuff like that, and him stomping and, you know, getting real mad. Those fights are really cool and impressive, but that was probably like the most significant story because it was your book, which is crazy, which is even stranger that the characters would remember you and remember that Amanda was gone.
Yeah, stuff. He does. Like, I'm watching it. Like, he's, when he walks in here, he knows who he is, and he says, "Where's?" So apparently the guy, Amanda, was the guy in the book's wife.
His wife.
And steals her from the book.
Yeah. He wrote them to be married, be happily married, and then stole his girl because he wrote it so well. Yeah. That's kind of crazy. And then one of the last things you do is you go into book 6, which is called The Heart of Sand. And what you're trying to get out of the Heart of Sand is you're trying to get a weather controlling device, if I'm not mistaken. Let me pull it back up. Where my thing go? Okay, yeah, you're trying to get a weather controlling device. Now, this is probably my favorite book. I think I like this one just because it's really cool and it was real reminiscent of some of Brandon Sanderson's books with the Knights of Radiance, the Stormlight Archives, rather. And the whole point of this is it's trains and then like emotional storms, kind of like the emotional sprint from the Stormlight Archive. But then there were literally like rage storms and depression storms and stuff like that. But when the storm would hit, it not only was it like a massive storm, like a hurricane, like a desert, what do you call that, sandstorm, but anyone caught in it was overcome with that emotion. Mm-hmm. And would sometimes lead to their death because people are like just raging in the middle of a storm, you know, so you have to like get inside, close the door, so I think you're still subtly affected by the storm even mm-hmm. if you're inside, but like being out and about, just imagine going into a blind rage in a sandstorm and just like slam dancing and trying to, you know, and the whole world is like all this sand and all these storms and everyone's got their own little like personal train and all these train tracks everywhere and you go and you're just like on these trains. Like the story starts, I think you're like coming into somebody's train who's dead mm-hmm. and then you're like, you got to steal their train and then pretend to be them so that you get access to the rest of the book.
Get inside the safe place.
Mm-hmm. And that's pretty cool. But I thought that one was really cool. And you come in and out of that one a couple of times. I didn't mention, because it starts in the timeless manner. Mm-hmm. It starts there. Is there are cops that come to try to arrest you, mm-hmm. which is, I don't know how they get access to your book. Like that, there's a whole other.
I guess they can jump in. I guess anybody can jump into the book. Any copy of the book and
yeah.
chase you down. But this is the book. So that's the thing. We get to the stuff. Is like if he's running around inside the book doing things. Is the book changing
constantly? Again, some suspension of disbelief there. But it is overall very enjoyable. Don't think about it too much. But you do encounter some cops in timeless manner, mm-hmm. and then you think like two times you fight the cops, and then you. Once you come here to the weather controlling device, like as you get the weather controlling device, then you...
A whole bunch of cops.
There's a bunch of cops because it was like a sting operation. I don't know. I guess someone leaked some information to him that this is the book that was being caught next and that you were trying to do it. And there's a whole rigmarole that goes on there. And then that's really cool. And then there is a seventh book that's not really a book.
Just the end of the game, I guess.
Kinda. It's the what's the name of that book? It's just called The Mastermind. And the whole point of this book is it only exists so that these people who have hired you to steal these items and stuff mm-hmm. for them, it's where their hideout is. I think the book only exists to be their hideout.
That's weird.
It's a strange little thing. And but you're going in there, and this one's really cool because it lets you kind of see what they've been doing, and they're using some of the items as tools for espionage or for murder and stuff like that. And there are two achievements here.
Is that getting through without fighting nobody and getting through with killing everybody?
But there's the thing that is use every artifact and then use artifacts.
We talked about the artifacts.
Well, the artifacts you only get here.
In this way, yeah.
In this particular book. There are 10 artifacts and they are, as you progress through the fight, you get a choice between multiple things. This one's really cool because mm-hmm. you get the wand, you get the Cornelius wand, then you get a broom, and then there is a bunch of different stuff. There's the bottle of life. There's something called a blaster. Then there's a cloak, and then the toxin, and the doll, and the book. and there's one or two others I might be missing. But each one either does a world ability on the outside that lets you avoid combat or get a surprise.
You got advantage in that
combat. In the combat. Yeah, like the blaster lets you hit all enemies for like 5 or 10 damage or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the broom lets you like zip by. And then of course the elixir of life fully restores you and stuff like that. And then the cloak lets you turn invisible to avoid combat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like there's the problem is with that is you have to do it twice.
Because that's all the achievements for using every item.
Is for using every item, then using no items. No artifacts. Because you have to pick an artifact no matter what, but you don't have to use it in combat or use it in the dialogue choices to avoid combat. Mm. Now, one of the things we talked about is you do have to play through, I guess, you do have to play through every story twice. Now, I think part of our playthrough that we did, instead of redoing, we still did everything twice, but instead of replaying the entire game, is you would play through the game, make the decision you didn't want to play through, then reload your save and play through again, so you can do like 1.5. But this last book, you did have to play completely through twice.
Yeah.
So you would call that save scum your for the achievements, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll be honest, I kind of forget the ending of the game.
Yeah.
You go through all this stuff, and you get the shackle. I think you become like a double agent, and you kind of give over, I guess, essentially. And I think you work with the cops and you get your... It kind of ends on like a happier note where you're... he decides to go out. I think he gets like a reduced sentence, but he's like, I'm going to do the rest of my stuff and not do anything. And like the cool thing is, as you're progressing through the story, his dilapidated apartment, I mean, like janky apartment, as you progress through, there is a slight currency exchange, I guess, from the individuals that have hired you, because your room does get better as it goes on. You get like
dramatically better. He gets like a lamp and
stuff. You get a lamp, you get a chair, you get like a little, you know, it does get progressively better because you're slightly getting paid. And then the end of the thing happens. And now this is the part that bothered me the most, is so you spend this whole game with Roderick, and he's, you know, you guys are trying to constantly figure out who he's from, what book he's from, this, that, and the other. And because he is an item that only exists in the books, you don't bring him to the... Like, you bring the necklace with you, but he can't talk to you. And then once you go into the book, then he can talk to you. And you're constantly having conversations and stuff through the whole game. And then like part of the epilogue is you're returning Roderick to the book that he came from. You finally figured it out. Now, I don't know exactly how long it was, but it seems like it was a couple of years. Is the way the time frame works. Is you're like, I've been trying so hard to reunite you with yourself, old friend. And then the big reveal, like, I'm going to spoil this for people just because I didn't understand why it was so cool. But like the big reveal that Roderick, the book that he came from and who he is John Watson from the Sherlock Holmes series.
Is that the reveal?
The reveal is Roderick is actually Watson. And I was like, really? All that? That was lame. That was the thing that... it kind of annoyed me. Not kind of, it did. And I was like, really, all that? And he's just John Watson from Sherlock Holmes? That seems kind of lame. I guess there's one like, we love Sherlock Holmes, so let's put it in here somewhere. But I was let down by the little epilogue of that. But I enjoyed everything else. Like you said, the fightings were cool. If these were real books, I would probably read every single one of them. I think each of the books are really cool. They have their own enough lore and stuff that I think I would enjoy the book if it were real.
Yeah, it's a trip. They put so much into this game.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for a short game.
Yeah, for a very short game. The thing that annoys me is we talk about the writing being good and stuff like that, but I look on the IMDb page, I look on the Wikipedia page, and some other ones that I go to, and I can't find a writer. I can't find the director of the game, I can't find the writer of the game, but I can find the writer and director and stuff like that for The Final Station. But I can't find it for this one. It's blank. And I was like, why is it so hard to find the information? You'd think you'd want to advertise that you wrote this, that you created this. But I couldn't find it. And that doesn't make any sense why I couldn't find it. Because, I mean, IMDb, as silly as that is, you can find some good stuff on IMDb. Because it usually has like a writer or producer. And then you can click on that and find other works. But big negative. Let's see. Did you have anything that I touched on that maybe sparked a memory in your head, Drew?
I'm just watching some of the other videos now. I don't get to talk about this stuff forever much by going off the stuff I'm seeing in the videos, so we don't worry about it too much. It's just hard to, I had this sometimes when we talk about games, it's hard to press how cool it looks and how neat the idea is. If you're not like looking at it or experiencing it, it's kind of hard to sell it sometime in words. Like if you just watch a couple of the, you know, YouTube videos about it and you, as somebody playing it, you might get a small sense of it, but like you kind of need to experience the game as a whole, like from start to finish and let it all come together. Cause the writing, there's a lot of story we didn't go into. There's lots of conversations between the main character and Roderick throughout every book. There's lots of different things of Roderick knowing what's going on in different books, because I guess he's read a lot of these, read all these books, so he knows a lot of stuff that's going on. I don't know, man.
And then the main character complains a lot. Well, because then there's a whole moral dilemma of certain situations of like when you kill someone in a book, does it matter? Are they a real person or not? Mm-hmm. And then some of your choices as Entian, you could be like, no, they're not real because they're just in a book. But then you find out, then the reveal that his crime is he took a woman out of the book because he was in love with her. It kind of makes you question your whole thing. You're like, oh, I've just been killing people willy-nilly because I didn't think they were people. And then Roderick speaks to you about your paradox as being your, what's the word I'm looking for? Not paradox, but your hypocrite, being a hypocrite, I guess, of like that you don't think these are real people. And then like their emotions can't be real because one of the big choices is like give that dude half the potion or give him anything at all in the first book.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So there's a lot of like morality questions of whether these are real or fake people. But in the books, they're real.
To them, they're real.
Yeah. So there's a kind of a cool little moral thing going that goes on there. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed my ride very much. It'd be a cool, if they'd have to like really, really work on it, it'd be a really cool movie or even a book, like a series.
Be a very cool TV series.
Yeah, but you gotta think how many books are out there in existence? Way too many. There's so many, it's impossible to read every book out there.
You could just do these ones, though.
Yeah, you could just literally just do these ones and each be like, make it a miniseries, you know, an hour long or whatever each episode, and do a book in each episode or something like that. Or it'd be really difficult to do like a season per book, but that'd be too much.
No, we could do a couple episodes, two or three episodes. I would take two or three episodes per book. Leave you find little cliffhangers. I mean, but this game, nobody's really heard of this game, so it's kind of sad we won't really get like anything beyond this game probably of this.
It does make me sad. Yeah, some other people talk about it being enjoying the premise, but the getting tired. You're like, seven books is kind of a bit.
Well, I think it's when it changes up what each book is, they're not similar in any way. The gameplay is similar, obviously, but what each book's world is different. You're experiencing a whole different thing each time. I think that keeps it somewhat fresh. I don't remember, 10 hours ain't a very long game.
No, especially if you're over the course of a weekend. Especially
if you're changing your environment every hour. You know what I mean?
A lot, like,
I don't know. That's just our opinion, though.
Yeah, some people have a similar thing. I'm looking at some of the other things here. People say the writing and combat were bland, which that's just someone who's trying to be snooty. Then other people say that the art direction was really good. The gameplay was very simple, yet effective as a gameplay loop.
That's what I said.
Very, very simple. And stuff like that. And then someone else right here even said it'd be really cool as like a game subscription thing where you pay, you know, monthly and then you get access to different books. It'd be like a cool little...
So hard to maintain.
Yeah, it would be.
It probably took them years to write this game. You want a monthly new set of something. That would never happen. That's like back when like Halo had promised those new episodes every week or every month, whatever. Remember Halo was Halo 4? That barely, and if they couldn't pull off something like that, then no small company could.
Exactly. Is there anything I didn't touch on that you want to touch back on? Did you have some particular memory looking at the pictures and the videos of a particular book that stood out to you more than the others?
No, I liked them. It's hard to like pick a favorite because they're all done so well, and you're not really in them long enough to really
get tired of them,
and you kind of move on to the next one. I will say when I was watching the one about the storms, you forgot because they're emotional storm or some other kind of storms, but the storm you're trying to get away from is a death storm.
Oh,
an actual storm a storm of death. Which people say you got to run inside, get inside these walls to get away from the the death storm. Shit, that's intense.
I think we've done pretty good. Do you want to go into the ratings, or is there something you want to touch on?
Not really. I wish we could do. It's hard to do.
I wish we could do it more justice.
In a podcast, it's hard to do stuff justice for something like this. I think people should go out, and it was on Game Pass. So you might have missed your chance to play it, but this game's worth every bit of. I mean, gosh,
$10-$15 probably.
I think, well, I'm looking right here. It's base retail price is $14.99. That's not awful.
That's worth, I mean.
I think so.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
we played it for, admittedly, we did use a guide always. We used a TA guide to get through it all the faster. Drew was almost 11 hours, 10 hours, 51 minutes, and I was 11 and a half hours. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, you're like, that's almost that's like $1.50 an hour. That's really not awful.
You can't. People have the discussion all the time about putting a number value to an hour. I don't know. For a unique experience like this, I don't care if people say the writing's bland. I don't know. I mean, you've never played anything else like this. I say the closest things would be other CRPGs, and I think what's important for CRPGs is the world to be interesting and characters to be interesting, and this had that compared to me trying a much bigger one like Pillars of Eternity, which is 50, 60, 70 hours long, and I got bored of Pillars of Eternity, spent less time with Pillars of Eternity than I spent with this game, and I was bored in Pillars of Eternity, you know.
Yeah,
just saying.
Yeah.
What's important about is the world itself what makes it interesting. This game kind of grabs you, and it's like it's strange enough and weird enough, and you're interested about what's going on. You might not even know when you're playing how many different books you're going to jump into, and to constantly jump into a book and it's not like a variation of what you've done did before. It's like everything about the world is different, and the look of it and stuff like that. It's just done really, really well, you know, and I really enjoyed this overall enough that I think I'm going to, I told you my rating before the podcast, I think I'm going to bump mine up a number because talking about it and like looking at it, and it was like,
re-looking at it, you're like, and just one of those things where like, it's not like fogged by nostalgia. And we did this, hold on, let me real quick. We should have did this a little sooner, but for my achievements, I did it in.
I did it in June last year.
Yeah. Over the course of like a weekend, it says I started June 9th and finished June 12th mm-hmm. of 2024.
Yeah, I did June 10th to 12th, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
10 hours, all achievements.
It's not bad over the course of a weekend.
We just play so many games, it's hard to get them all into the podcast.
And yeah, there are ones that we're not going
to
talk about.
And the ones we don't want to talk about. The ones like this, this one kind of slipped to the cracks a little bit. And I'm kind of glad we kind of... It was on like your notes somewhere, like, oh yeah, oh man.
We need to come back to that. But we skipped up to this one when we were trying to figure out what game to do next.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing that was genuinely disappointing was who Roderick was. I was like, ugh. That was the only thing that really just kind of like rubbed me the wrong way.
Some folks might like that.
Yeah, maybe. But do you want to go ahead and do your rating, and then I'll do mine?
Yeah, I've said a bunch of stuff about it. I mean, I've not talked much as Blake has, but the look of the game is going to grab you. Like, even if the walk around the apartment ain't going to grab you, but like when you first start jumping into books and you're like walking around, that's kind of the jail cells, whatever. But like when you start realizing that you're going to get to go into different books and jumping into them and getting to look at the worlds, it just looks so cool. Like, and the art style is really good. And I don't know, sometimes it's just why you play video games sometimes, to see cool worlds. And this game feeds you a bunch of different worlds to kind of cool. Like you said, any one of these books could have been a game. I don't know if you said, but any one of these books, they could have made a.
Yeah.
Now, staying in one of these books for more than an hour or two might have overstayed its welcome, but maybe building a world around any one of these books was possible. I mean, it would have been really interesting. The gameplay is fine. We always say we're not much into puzzle stuff. That's why we follow guides to kind of tell us where to go to get to the puzzle stuff quick enough to be able to, but a lot of the puzzle solving things is kind of cool because you're manipulating the book and the way that world works sometimes, but you could use ink to manipulate how that world works. So you use the ink quite a bit to do that kind of stuff, which is kind of cool. There's no telling any number of handful of things that we don't remember that you've done, but you're literally manipulating books. Mm-hmm. To find your way through them, to survive everything, to get through them. And then, you know, the combat itself, simple but effective. Like, it just works. Sometimes combat don't have to be, like, I just recently quit a game because the combat was so complicated that I didn't want to play it. So then I put the combat to auto, and then that was so boring, I couldn't stand it. The game became so boring, I couldn't stand it. So they did a thing where, like, and that was, we're going to talk about Tales of Zestiria. The base combat, that game, every 2 minutes is like popping up some combat tutorial and another one and another one. I've never been tutorial so much in my life, or something I do not understand. That's too much.
Yeah, combat should be fairly simple. Like, cool, give me some status effects.
Or like, what's it called?
Battle Chasers Night War being some
of that
those.
That too. That's too.
Probably one of my favorite combats even to still.
And then, God, Slay the Spire is simple, yet can be very complicated. But the base idea has to be simple.
Yeah.
And this takes the base idea, keeps it simple, and then adds very subtle layers to it based off your skills changing, and handles it incredibly well, I feel like. So, I don't know. I think it's an all-around great experience that, like, basically nobody played. I hope that the Game Pass gave it a little more life when it was on there. I feel like if it was getting more play, they might have renewed their Game Pass contract. Usually some games you see, they say they're leaving and then they stay or they come back. I just kind of hope it got enough notice to get the company a little more life in the company.
Yeah. We just kind of to speak to that is I don't know all the stats. I don't know like sales and stuff like that. But at least with Game Pass and stuff like that, I can tell you, this is strictly just on TA, mind you. But at least over 10,000 people have played it.
That's such a small pool.
I know.
From. That's just specifically achievement hunters. That's not really. I mean, that's a lot of people, but like not enough to. But that's not a realistic number of people who played it, though.
Yeah, no.
With all that said, you know, I'm just gabbing about how cool it was and like, generally enjoying it. I wish we kind of could do the game a bit more justice in a podcast, but go watch. I'd go play it first of all.
You're gonna add a link to the trailer.
I'll add a link to a gameplay trailer and go take a look at if you like the way it looks or like anything we said about it. You know, support the little developer and buy their game and give it a play. I think it's really cool. You know, like, I just really enjoyed it. So with all of that, I said I bumped up my original rating. I'm going to go crazy on this because I really enjoyed talking about it and enjoyed having, you know, looking at it again. I'm going to give this 9 real world items pulled into a book for random purposes out of 10.
No problem with that at all. It's good. I give it, like I said, I agree with everything Drew said. Each one of these books could have been kind of like its own little game. Entian as a character, he's okay. He contradicts himself a little bit, but you know, of course, he's like, because his biggest thing, he's always complaining about these other books. He complains about all these other books when you go into
not being as well written as his.
He's like, these aren't well written. He's like, I could do better than that if I could get my writer's block off. Like, he's kind of a bit of a jerk a little bit. And then the whole big reveal that, you know, he's such a good character writer that he felt, not only did they fall in love, is she broke up with him because because his own arrogance or something like that. It kind of goes into more detail, but the fact that he wrote this girl to be amazing and perfect, and he fell in love with her, brought her to the real world, they were together, and then she got tired of his nonsense and broke up with him. So he's kind of not the greatest character.
And people like a flawed character.
Yeah, nothing wrong with a flawed character, but I just think it's kind of funny. But I'm going to stick with what I had here, just because, you know, a couple of things brought me wrong, the big epilogue or whatever, the twist and stuff like that. But I'm going to give it 8 dives into a book out of 10. Because that diving animation was cool every time. I liked it.
Yeah, it's neat. Done really well.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think we're kind of a cool thing. We're going to announce our next game.
Yeah, we've eyeballed this stuff for a long time. I figured we'd finally jump in and do one of these. It's a wide world of this. So we decided to jump into, because there's not enough video games in the world, that we've had to jump into ROM hacks, specifically so far just a Pokemon ROM hack. It's a ROM hack done on its hacked version of Pokemon Fire Red, which is the Game Boy Advance remake of Pokemon Red. Mm-hmm. Decided to go big or go home, I guess. Some people say once you play this one, it kind of ruins all other ones for you. But we finally downloaded and played on our Analog Pockets. We got Analog Pockets. We don't know what Analog Pocket is. We'll talk about it a little bit on the next podcast. We downloaded the ROM hacks for and played Pokemon Unbound, which if you Google it at all, it is like the biggest Pokemon ROM hack. It's if you don't know what a Pokemon ROM hack is, it's people taking assets from Pokemon and creating their own Pokemon stories within those worlds, within that world. And
sometimes if they rebuild the world, they just use the assets.
There's a couple other good sizes, but none are really as big as Unbound is like apparently the king of, like, it's an original map, it's original characters. The only thing other than it has all the Pokemon. We'll talk more about it, but it has like every freaking Pokemon up until
I don't think it goes into Gen 8.
Yeah, so many freaking Pokemon, which we'll talk about that. And we'll talk more about what we wanted, what we kind of
obviously the game isn't made for us, but what we kind of want out of a ROM hack, and what this one kind of presents to you, and kind of we'll talk about how we intend to. We'll keep our eyes out on the ROM hack community to play other Pokemon ROM hacks before we eventually we're going to play Scarlet and Violet, you know, vanilla on here, and we'll talk about that on the podcast probably as well. But all that to say that we played. This has been, you know, couple of months ago now. It's been a while now for that as well. So we played through Pokemon Unbound. We got some thoughts about it. It's interesting. I don't know if anybody's ever dived into that, but if you have played Unbound or played any other ROM hacks of note, and you want to write into the podcast, you know, like at the beginning of the podcast, you can write into any of our
social media,
any of the social medias, and share any thoughts, email us anything like that about any thoughts you have on Unbound or any other Pokemon ROM hack. If you have any recommendations for other ones to play, we kind of know which one we're going to play next, I feel like, at some point.
Mm-hmm.
The Emerald Sea Glass, probably.
Either Emerald Sea Glass, or there's that
Team Rocket Red. Yeah, that one where they where you play as a Team Rocket member.
That one sounds kind of cool.
We might do Team Rocket Red first, maybe, or Team Rocket.
If we find that version, it'll be the most complete version, because Emerald Sea Glass just came out, so he might still be working on it.
No, he's moved on to another one.
Oh, yeah? Okay, well, yeah. What do I know? Or he or she. In trouble.
So, yeah, any thoughts you want to share about that? Because some people, you know, a lot of people play Pokemon games because it's the biggest franchise in the world, if you didn't know. We mentioned multiple times on different Pokemon games we've talked about on here. And if you played any ROM hack, specifically Unbound or any other ones, please write in and tell us about them. We will share it on the podcast. With that, we will wrap this thing up by thanking Jared Jones and the guys of Emerge for letting us use Letting Go. Letting Go is now our intro song, and now it's going to be on their intro video. Check out that on the...
So we should send Jared a copy of the video.
Yeah, we could. If you've got a downloadable copy of it, I can send it to him.
I should do it and email it to him or whatever.
He'll think that's pretty cool as well. So thank him. We'll thank him for that again. He'll be excited to see that attached to like a really cool video. The intro is so cool.
I love the intro.
If Daniel, if we had told Daniel enough times, like it's the freaking rules, man. It's like the best part of anything. Like we're the most excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Brian was able to use his super powerful super powerful gaming computer. I almost said laptop again.
You're dumb.
To drop it into the beginning of our Twitch stream. So
streamers.
We're going to keep doing that, at least for the Dark Souls playthroughs. I want to thank Devious Pixel for the art for the podcast. You know, find him, give him, throw some work his way, tell him we sent you. He'd probably appreciate a little work and a little money. And thank Daniel, use him for a couple of things too. We got a new thumbnail for Blake's YouTube video from him.
I'll be using specifically for the RoboCop stuff.
Yeah, it's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's really great. And I always want to thank, you know, Daniel for doing the editing for this, whatever.
You mean Brian?
What did I say?
You said Daniel.
I said Daniel again. Dang. Thank Daniel for the intro song, or video, and then thank Brian for, we got two cousins that help us do things. Thank Brian for editing the podcast and playing games up with him. We have a good time with him because he cuts out all the things you coughs or other nonsense.
Snorts, farts, burps.
All the gross things that you can get on the Patreon or cut out for the main release, and Brian takes care of all that for us. And he does the whatever video game music you hear, Brian finds that stuff for us too. So we do appreciate the time he takes to do that. With all that said, I'm pretty much done here. So check out the Bookwalker, man. Play it and write to us about it. Tell us your surprise at how good it was that we do play good games on this podcast, even though we spend some episodes complaining. We have an episode coming eventually. We're going to spend the entire episode complaining.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
We'll give you a heads up. We're not going to do it right now. We got a couple other games we want to talk about, but Blake just recently finished a game, a really, really, really famous game that I straight up despise. Blake tolerated for 40 odd hours. But we're going to spend a whole episode complaining about that game, and nobody's going to like that but me and Blake.
No. But we'll get to that one eventually.
We'll get there eventually. So that's all I got. I'll let Blake wrap up here and play some Pokemon and write to us about some Pokemon. We want to hear people's thoughts about
Unbound. Pokemon in general or Pokemon Unbound or whatever.
Anything in between.
I did want to do one tack on, because so you talk about all the music and stuff. I don't remember none of the music really jumped out at me. I think each world had its own specific kind of soundtrack, but I can't. Nothing. Sometimes like a particular song, like when we did Yeeze, like two songs, like
there's a difference between a Yeeze soundtrack and then
that's unfair.
Not that this music was bad, but like I don't remember.
Nothing really popped out at me, unfortunately. So good luck, Brian. It should be fairly simple to find some music, I hope.
It's harder
on more obscure games, so you might have a hard time.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see. But with that being said, I do want to wish everybody a good evening and good night. Thank you.
Thank you.